Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT Photo with Catherine Hall and Leo Laporte. Episode 23, recorded September 6th, 2011. Arnie Freitag. TWiT Photo is brought to you by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/TWiT Photo. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/TWiT. It's time for TWiT Photo with Catherine Hall, Leo Laporte here. I love this show. It's a show where we spend time with I'm not kidding. Catherine brings in the best photographers in the world to talk about their work, how they do it, what they think about it. It's a great way to learn from the very best in the business. And I'm really excited about our photographer of the day today. But first, let me introduce Catherine Hall, who is in her own right such a talented photographer.
Hi, thank Catherine. You, Leo. Great to see Hi, everyone. You.
CatherineHall.net, if people want to see your photos, your blog, more about your studios. And you do, and I love this, every week you do a picture of the week. We're coming off Burning Man.
Yeah, we're coming off. This is, the end was yesterday, so I thought it'd be
You didn't
relevant.
Go!
I didn't go.
In fact, you were supposed to be in Tahoe today, and you very kindly.
I was in L.A., but I flew back yesterday.
You ended your vacation early so we could
So we could
show.
Be here. I came back Thank for you guys.
Well, we got such a great photographer. You couldn't miss this. But this is beautiful. This is called Desert Nymph. And
So just a quick tip. I've been getting questions about shooting in the desert and dusty environments.
Well, main reason I haven't gone to Burning Man is that the alkali
it's
at
powder,
Black Rock
it's
is
powder.
Very fine and terrible for cameras, right?
Yeah, and your lungs.
Yeah. So what do you do?
But we talked, Tyler Stableford and his issue, he was talking about EWA marine bags.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's great about those is that you can fit them on different SLRs and different lenses. So you're not stuck with one body or one bag, like a housing that only fits one setup. So the EWA marine bag is one way to go. And they make a lot of different types. But if you want to go even cheaper, which I usually do, I actually use a Ziploc bag.
What?
And if you pull that link up.
Well, how much? The bags are $359.
Yeah.
So I want to go cheaper.
You could, it just depends on.
But you could use this as water as well as dust or anything.
Yeah, it's a housing. You can do water. You can use it anything. So if you're going to be around. Yeah.
These are pennies.
They make extra large ones, and I just bring a whole bag, and I'll just, the thing about the, if you have a good SLR with L-series lenses, it will keep the dust out. They're made to be in these elements.
I've talked to so many people. Trey Ratcliffe goes every year. So many good photographers go to Burning Man. And it really is a great place to go. Trey brought, and he's starting now to put up his pictures, Tom from MySpace this year. And they took pictures. Tom's a new photographer. And, of course, Trey Ratcliffe, a great teacher. So I'm looking forward to seeing their pictures. But Trey even said, don't bring your best camera. Bring your old beater camera.
Yeah, that you're not going to worry about.
Yeah.
And then just throw it in a bag to keep it sort of extra protected.
Right.
And then you just wipe it off at night.
So not the 5D Mark II on that one.
Well, I bring mine, though.
Do you? You want the best images, right?
Well, because I have a problem. Like, I actually shoot seriously when I'm out there. And so if it was at a low quality, then it would drive me insane.
Right.
So
I don't blame you. I mean, it is really.
But it depends on your preference.
It's very photogenic. The light, all the fire, the Burning Man itself, the burning temple the next day. They're so photogenic. I see so many great images.
Arnie, have you ever been to Burning Man?
No, I never have.
Have you ever had the urge?
He doesn't need a
gun. Yes, no.
Arnie, I'm so pleased.
I have a home in the desert already. When it gets that hot, I need to be near water.
I'm so pleased to introduce our guest. This guy is so great and a legend. Arnie Freitag is the Playboy photographer. There are others, but he is the guy who's. Have you done more centerfolds than anybody else, Arnie?
Yes, I have.
He holds the record for the most centerfolds. And I asked my boyfriend, who works in L.A. in the industry, who's the guy? Like, is there one main person you want to go to if you're going to have a Playboy photographer on? And he asked around, and every single person he asked said that we had to talk to Arnie.
Well, I'll tell you how good Arnie is, because after years of reading Playboy, I know his name. And I, you know, I think people read the and they look at the centerfolds, but Arnie's such a legend that despite all the beauty in the pages of Playboy, we know the name Arnie Freitag. And that's really, I think that says something.
Yeah. So one thing to be aware of with the show, though, is with such prestige, he comes being kind of a jerk. So you're just beware, Arnie's going to be kind
he's
of a
not.
Jerk.
He's a legend as being a nice guy.
No, but this is the funniest
okay,
thing.
I'm out of here.
That's it.
I'm going to launch
off the camera.
This. No, actually, I'm going to launch right into this. One of the things that was really interesting is I was talking on the phone, and I'm like, I can see why people get naked in front of you. You're awesome. You're so nice and just, I don't know, you just feel comfortable with him. And he said when someone had approached him and said, God, you have a right to be a jerk. Can you elaborate that on that, Arnie?
Well, I don't think anybody has a right to be a jerk, first of all. That's no one has that right. But I think, you know, if you're too arrogant in this business, you know, I deal with amateur models all the time. These girls come as, to us as playmates, have never modeled before in their life. And if you come across arrogant or not being such a nice guy, you know, you're not going to get the most out of them. You're going to intimidate them, scare them, make them uncomfortable. And the whole thing is, it's really about them. It's not about me. You know, it's their face that are going in front of millions and millions of people every month, not my face. So I want them to get the attention. I want them to make, you know, make themselves look as best as possible and to feel as good as they can and feel good about what they're doing. So being arrogant or cocky is not going to work in this case.
Arnie, I do have one request, though. Could you unbutton that top button for me? It seems...
Don't you more gold chain?
Don't you feel a little just constricted a little bit? Just open up a little.
No, my release doesn't suggest I do that. Like my lawyer said I shouldn't undress in front of you on camera, so that's not going to happen. Nice try, though.
Yeah.
The way you say it, by the way, the way you really say it is, you know, I love that shirt. It's a great-looking shirt on you, but I personally think it looks a little nicer if the top button's undone.
Oh,
it
there
just
you
feels
go.
A little,
oh, see,
I mean,
look.
It's a little constricted.
It's already starting.
I'm glad. Anything, Arnie, anything you say.
So I think this is so fascinating, though, because I would have never guessed that the Playmates have not modeled. I would have thought there are people that have
of
modeling.
By the time they get to you, I mean, these people, aren't they ready? I mean,
no, not at all. No. You have to understand that the girls that we use, we prefer them not to be professionals because it's about the girl next door. It's about shooting a girl or seeing a girl in the centerfold that you might actually have a chance of meeting. If
right.
you're shooting Carmen Electra or Pam Anderson, you're not going to meet her.
Right.
You know, there's no way. I mean, those people don't hang out in your neighborhood, you know? So when Hef started this whole idea back in the 50s, it really started off as the girl next door, the secretary, the next office, the girl down the street, the girl who works in the ice cream parlor. And what makes it work so well is that it makes the girls approachable to the average guy. These are not untouchable girls. You will meet them. You know, it could be your neighbor, it could be, you know, a friend of the family. It's just a real, honest guy girl, not a model. That's untouchable. She's not a supermodel yet, you know, but once she gets to be a playmate, then, you know, that changes a bit.
Right.
But as we're shooting them, they really are the girl next door.
Arnie,
so,
they haven't been programmed
at all.
You've done 70 Playboy covers, 150 centerfolds. But what did you do before you did this? How did you get your start?
I was in art school first. After high school, and I was going for a design degree, and I had to pick a minor subject, so I just thought, well, I'll take photography. I never had a camera in my life, and I was so intrigued with it immediately that it was such a fast thing to do. I was used to painting, which takes oil paints, which takes a long, long time, and all of a sudden I have an image I see in my mind, and I push a button, and it's developed in the afternoon. And there it is. It's like immediate. So I liked the speed of it. I liked the immediacy of it. So I started doing a lot of editorial street photography. You know, I live in Chicago, and that's got a great environment for street documentary type photography. And but at the same time, I was 18 years old, and I started shooting my girlfriends or girls I wanted to meet. And I found out rapidly that, geez, it's a great way to meet girls. To be honest. You know?
You've met a few since then.
Yeah, I'd love to take my picture. Okay, great. You know, let's go out to the woods and shoot, you know, by a tree or do some portraits, you know. And I just found I started liking to shoot. I like shooting women. You know, I always loved women, obviously. And this kind of gave me a tool to meet them and to make them look beautiful. And, you know, it was nice for them to see how happy they were, that they looked great. And then I decided, well, I'm actually a better photographer than I am an artist. So I went to Brooks Institute of Photography in Santa Barbara. And I needed to know the technical aspects. Now, Brooks is known not as much for its creativity like the Art Center is. It's known for technical expertise. So I felt I already had a creative knowledge. I wanted to learn the technical. So I got there, and they start you off with a 4x5 camera right off the bat, and which really, really helped me later, because when I started shooting centerfolds, those were shot in 8x10. And nobody knows how to shoot 8x10 pictures with people in it. It's just unheard of. They're more of a product camera.
Why? Can I interject? Why did you shoot on an 8x10?
Because Hef wanted then and still wants the absolute best quality money can buy in his writers, his cartoonists, his photographers, everybody. He wants the magazine to have the best talent possible. In order to make it look the best, you need 8x10.
Do you think once it's screened and printed, and of course the centerfold's a pretty big image, that you can tell the difference?
Yeah, do you think you can tell the difference?
Between what, 8x10 and 35?
Yeah, when it's just with the end product.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We've had people challenge us, right? And there's a point where we went from 8x10 to 5x7, or actually 8x10 to 2.25 to 3/4. And people were saying, oh my God, the quality's falling apart. You know, you should go back to 8x10. Well, we found out with newer printing processes that the 2.25, 2.75 worked about as well as the 8x10. But prior to that, you had to have the largest image possible in order to reproduce to that large of a fold-out. So, yeah, you could definitely tell the difference. The grain structure, the contrast, everything. Yes.
But you have a camera that you say rivals an 8x10 right now?
Yeah, I do. It's frightening. It's a Leica S2. Which is a 37 megapixel camera, and I just started using it. And I did a headshot of a girl, and we started blowing it up, and I just focused on her lips, and we kept blowing up, and you can start seeing the cells on her mouth, and all the fine hairs under her lip. I didn't know women had fine hairs under her lip. They do. It's like, so that camera is actually sharper than the 8x10 was. It's amazing.
So do you think Hef will ever agree to using an S2?
Well, I just shot my last centerfold on an S2.
Oh, interesting. Is that a full frame sensor, or is it bigger than full frame?
It's slightly bigger.
Okay.
Slightly.
I think they're making
some... We stopped using 8x10 a couple years ago because they don't even make 8x10 transparency film or Polaroids, and it just got too expensive.
So, quick question. You're talking earlier about a lot of the models being the girl next door. How are you recruiting these girls if they don't already have that background and books to show?
They come from all over the place. They come from, they can submit their photos on Playboy.com right now digitally. We have scouts out there that look for them. We have casting calls that we do around the country that we put on. Boyfriends will send pictures in, husbands send pictures in. There's just a million ways to find them. Find us somehow.
Do you work with them? Talk a little bit about your process before the shoot. How do you work with them to get them ready for... I mean, some of them probably have really never taken their clothes off in this kind of environment before at all.
Let's separate two things here. Let's separate the clothes being off from dealing with a new model. So it's tough enough, I'm sure a lot of people know they're out there, that when you deal with a girl who's never been in front of a camera...
Right.
They have no idea what to do. They have no idea how to make their face work, how to make their bodies work. They have no sense of their sexuality. So you need to start there. I start in the makeup room. I start talking to them about their family, their pets, you know, what they like to do. I try to make it about them. So they get comfortable talking to me like a friend. And I don't have a lot of time. I have maybe half an hour to do this. And then when they get in the studio, you know, they feel kind of comfortable with me, and I'm a pretty easygoing guy. So that goes back to Catherine's question about being arrogant and cocky. It doesn't work. So they're pretty comfortable with me already. And then I don't make a big deal of the clothes coming up. I just hand me a robe and we'll start.
Right.
I don't say, well, slowly takes a saw. I said, you know, it's like cold water. Just jump in, get over it.
And make it, and making it not a big deal. Just, hey, we're just going to do this.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
So they don't, and they, you know, eventually they all forget that they're naked, and they'll walk out in the public areas, you know, and there's carpenters or
my guys.
Because they forget they're, you know, it's not, we don't make an issue of it. So, but another thing I do with every new girl is I ask them, I don't always receive, but I ask them to please go home at night and look in the mirror and try different expressions. Look at the way their face works, you know, big smiles, small smiles, you know, frowns, squinting your eyes a little bit, sexy looks, and learn your craft, because if you want to be an actress or model, you need to learn that. So the problem is a lot of times they'll say, so did you go home and practice? And they go, no, I went to a movie instead. You know, so you can only lead a horse to water, you can't make it.
Yeah. So what's your number one tip with getting girls to sort of relax that don't have experience with modeling?
Or boys.
Well, I'll tell you, there's one really good trick I came up with. If I want a really sexy look like that was on the screen, I used to say, okay, look at the camera like you want this guy to buy you a drink in a bar. Well, that got nothing. I had a blank look. So I thought, okay, that didn't work. So then I said, okay, look at the camera like you want your boyfriend to buy a brand new Mercedes. And all of a sudden, the eyes get squinted, the little grin comes up, the head goes down, the eyes go up, kind of innocent, it's hysterical. And almost every woman knows that look. It works every single time.
So you said with women, when you're finding, you know, scouting out for these ladies, you said bar rules do not apply.
What's that?
Can you elaborate on that?
What is a bar
rule? Rules don't apply?
Bar rules.
Bar rules. When did I say bar rules?
You said bar rules don't apply.
You're not in a bar, I guess, huh?
Let's think
No, what I'm saying is when you try to get a sexy look is, you know, look at me like you
no,
want
to. No, I'll help you. I'll help you. You're okay. Talking about the face. The importance of the face. He was saying bar, you know, beer goggles.
Beer goggles do not apply.
No,
he was saying, he said bar rules do not apply, meaning I read it in an Esquire article, but and you can elaborate on this, but how they could have the most beautiful body, but if they don't have a pretty face, then at the end of the day, it's not going to work.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what most guys look at first at a girl. I personally look at her face.
The eyes.
I mean, I look at the face, yeah. Whether it's the eyes or, you know, I'm pretty quick at looking at a girl really fast and deciding, you know, is she playmate quality or not. But I just kind of look at the face, and if the face is there, then I look for the body. So I don't, bar rules, I guess, apply to guys in a bar that want to take a girl home, they don't care what the face looks like. That's just the opposite for us. We care a lot about what the face looks like.
Right.
Because, you know, we want the most beautiful girl imaginable. You know, and then, of course, the body to go with it. So that's why our playmates look so perfect. They almost are.
I got to ask you the retouching question, though. I mean, I think everybody assumes these pictures are heavily Photoshopped or retouched.
Can I get a quote from someone that was sent in a question?
Yeah.
A bit processed, Photoshopped beyond belief. That was from Mark. Can you elaborate if that is true or not?
Sure. Now, I can only talk about my images. I cannot talk about anybody else's.
Okay.
Okay? This is what I've developed over the years. Everything you're seeing on the screen is not Photoshop. I guarantee it, not Photoshop. At all.
You don't squeeze in their waistline. You don't touch out blemishes.
I will tell you why. Because when we shot centerfolds on 8x10, it would have cost way too much to retouch like they do today.
I guess you're right.
Yeah.
When I was shooting centerfolds starting in 1974, there was no Photoshop. It didn't exist. So I was trained with my editor at Playboy to make the picture flawlessly as possible because the film went right to half.
Wow.
If he saw the girl was too thick in the waist, you can fix that by using either wardrobe or a shadow or placing a hand there. We use a lot of wardrobe to do just that.
And light.
We use a lot of light and shadow to do just that.
Yeah.
We avoid the bad areas and accent the good areas. Now, that's something I'm trying to teach on my seminars. And what's going to happen eventually is these images that people are doing are going to become cartoons. They're no longer photographs. They're sketched out
right
on a pad with Photoshop. And a lot of things I see out there look so overly done, so overly Photoshopped, it's not even a picture anymore. So I'm a purist in that. I do not even know how to do Photoshop. My assistant does. I do not. And I don't want to know.
So
I try to shoot as clean, as pure as possible.
Right. So no one's going
because
in?
Because I always say, here's the thing I always have. Why in the world would you want to shoot for 8 hours a day, go home, and spend another 8 hours on your computer? You got with your guy friends, your girlfriends, your wife, your kids. You can have a drink, you can go boating, whatever. Why would you want to confine yourself to a digital darkroom for the next 8 hours?
But of
right
course,
the first time.
That takes a lot. Exactly. It takes a huge amount of craft up front and really knowing what you're doing and having great assistance. You've got to get it right.
Well, listen.
Well, I'll tell you something else. I can do this without assistance.
You don't have somebody spritzing them with water and powdering them.
I have makeup. But as far as photo assistants go, I light my own sets. They move the lights where I want to move it to. I do not hire people to light my sets. It's strictly up to me to light.
Right.
And I change my light on every model, every time I shoot. It's never the same.
Interesting.
So he...
Yeah, I tailor it to each girl. Depending on her facial structure and body, I'll tailor that light to each particular set.
So do you get the girl in there first, or have you done some scouting?
Absolutely.
So you get the girl in and say, now let's see what's going to look good.
Well, what I'll do is I'll look in the makeup room, I'll look at her, and I'll decide, okay, she's good with side light, she's good with shadow, one-to-one light, one-to-two, one-to-four, or she'll be better off with a top light or a hard-edged light, and then I'll judge that from just seeing her. And then I'll set it up in the studio. And before she's out of makeup, I'll just throw in a set for one quick shot and let her go back to makeup. And then I'll tailor it. I'll fine-tune it from there. So if she walks out of makeup, it'll be all ready to go.
Our chat room says the best centerfold of all time was Tawny Cable.
Ah!
tell me about that
favorites.
One.
Oh, she was a stunningly beautiful girl. I was lucky enough to shoot her in Hawaii, actually. She was living over there, and we spent a couple weeks in Hawaii. It was wonderful. Great girl. Beautiful. Stunningly beautiful.
Does the chat room's got another question. Do the girls say to you, Arnie, Photoshop this, please?
I'm sorry, you broke up. What?
Do the girls ever say to you, we want Photoshop?
No, because I show it to them on a computer. They go, oh, my God, I didn't know
I could
look
good.
Yeah. Well,
by the way, the image up right now.
Yeah.
The image up.
Yeah.
Right? The only reason I have that, it's not my favorite image by any means. It was freezing cold and pouring
rain.
Now, I mean, absolutely freezing cold. Now, the reason I have that shot in my slideshow is because I want to tell people you cannot publish excuses, which means I cannot go back after being on location, go back to my editor and say, well, it was raining or snowing or the hailstorm or, you know.
Too bad.
They can't publish that. They can't publish that excuse.
That's right.
So that entire scene is lit. The rows of chairs or benches behind her are lit. The car is lit inside and outside. She is lit. The hair light is lit. It's all lit. And it's covered with plastic bags. All the power packs are covered with plastic. There is no excuse. You have to get the job.
You got to get the shot.
And for a centerfold.
And it also goes for her. I mean, her attitude, look at her smiling.
She was
shivering, freezing cold.
She's a good model.
Yeah.
She did a good job.
She's a professional. Yeah.
We have a guy here who you're not going to want to miss every minute of. We're going to take a little break, but we'll have more with Arnie Freitag in just a little bit. And, of course, his website is a great place to go. And there are some images there that are more adult than the ones that we're showing. So just beware. But, boy, if you want to see Arnie's work, his website is fantastic, I have to say. But before we do that, I do want to mention one of our sponsors here, Audible.com, because without our sponsors, we got no show, my friends, and Audible's been a great supporter of Twit and Twit Photo since day one. Audiblepodcast.com/twitphoto if you'd like to find out more. I suppose when you're shooting, and I know you listen to music when you're shooting, Catherine, but for me, there are other times when I don't want to be thinking about what I'm doing, when I'm driving, when I'm gardening, when I'm washing dishes, when I'm at the gym, especially when I'm at the gym. And Audible is a lifesaver for that. 75,000 books you get some reading done. You can have a busy life. You can have a full career. You can have lots to do and still get that hour a day, 2 hours a day reading. How much time do you spend in the car, at the gym, cleaning the house, doing the garden? Audible.com. That's the place I want you to go to find out more. 75,000 titles, fiction, nonfiction. I listen to a lot of history because I like to fill my mind. It's just an amazing place for wonderful books. Here's one that just came out that might be kind of interesting. If you listened or read Carlo Marlante's Matterhorn, which was a novel about Vietnam, very powerful novel, he actually talks about his own experiences in combat in his new book, What It's Like to Go to War, narrated by Bronson Pinchot. This would be an amazing book to listen to. Maybe listen to Matterhorn and then listen to this. There's so much great stuff on here. And this is one of the reasons I love to go to audible.com, because I like to browse around and find stuff that I've never heard of or perhaps I remember and I would like to hear again. I remember when I was a kid, I read this all, I don't know how many hours of it, 57 hours of The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. This is a great history book about the World War II. You can listen to it. And, you know, 57 hours is a lot to read, but believe me, if you listen to a couple hours a day, you'll be done in a month.
Yeah.
And you can get this book free, absolutely free, by going to audiblepodcast.com/twitphoto. You'll be signing up for the gold account. That's a book a month. The first month's free. Your first book's free. You can cancel it any time, and you'll get to keep that book forever. So what I want you to do is go to Audible, pick a book. There's so many great ones to choose from, and then listen to it absolutely free on us by signing up at audiblepodcast.com/twitphoto. And we thank Audible so much for their support of our show. Arnie Freitag is our guest, the most prolific Playboy photographer ever, 70 covers, 150 centerfolds. Is a cover something you shoot differently? Do you do something different when you're doing a cover than when you know you're going to be doing the gatefold?
Yeah, put clothes on them.
And you find somewhere to put a bunny, too,
yeah.
I know.
Something like that. No, yeah, it's a different set of rules, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
You have to leave room for the type on top, of course. You have to leave room for the type for the different pictorials going to magazine. There's a different set of rules. A pretty simple, plain background, so it's not confusing.
Do you light it differently? Because one thing that strikes me is that the lighting is a little less moody on the covers, you know?
It depends on a shot. Yeah, it is. It appears to be less moody, I suppose, looking at the covers I'm looking at. That's not necessarily intentional. I think because the backgrounds are rather plain.
Right.
If you go too moody, you might lose some of the detail.
That's right.
One of the reasons we do it that way.
I mean, this one, the Joni Lohrer, is there's a lot of modeling going on in there, and light, interesting light, and so forth.
Yeah, that's one of the moodier ones. Yeah. I've got a few that are really, really moody. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Arnie,
it's not actually intentional.
You're known to have 40 to 50 lights during a centerfold shoot.
Holy cow.
40 to 50 lights. What are you using them for? Why do you need so many?
You got your belly button
light. Almost.
We're laughing, but he says, oh, no, there's three belly button lights.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I'm going to explain this very clearly. When you do a centerfold, it's designed to be looked at for a month. You're supposed to tear out a magazine, put it on a wall, and look at it. So therefore, that image has to be that much more perfect than any other photograph in the magazine. You're going to look at it for a long time.
Right.
That's your plan.
You're going to put it on a wall. It's going to be on people's walls forever.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, and Hef wants those to be absolutely perfect. So
yeah.
I approach a centerfold like I would a painting. And that comes from my background in art. I start with nothing, a blank canvas, and I start adding lights, little specular highlights.
Mm.
Like if you ever look at a Rembrandt painting, for instance, it's a very directional, they call it Rembrandt lighting. It's up high and there's a directional light from right or left side, and it creates a triangle of light on its cheekbone and face. It's called Rembrandt light. And it's very moody on one side and highlights on the other. But the rest of the images on the paintings of Rembrandt or that era all have little highlights, what they call specular highlights, right? The whole background's not lit. It's little highlights that the props of the room, in Rembrandt's case, it could be a bowl of fruit, something in the background, are picking the highlights up from that window up on top, which is your main light source. So in order to make something look round, for instance, you need to highlight one side and a shadow on the other. Otherwise, it looks flat. So the same rules apply to a body, as you're seeing on the screen.
I bet you could count 40 lights in this picture. I mean,
that's actually one of the simpler ones.
You're kidding.
That's like six.
This is only 30 lights.
But there's a lot of detail. Her eyes, everything, and the highlight on her bottom. I mean, everything.
But if you take, that's a really simple background. If you build a set behind
a whole set.
Everything in a centerfold set is lit separately.
Well, I have a picture.
Never put an umbrella in the background ever and light the whole set.
Yeah.
Is always lit with 10-degree or 3-degree grid spots with usually a colored gel. Everything is lit by itself with a separate power pack and a separate head. That way I can control exactly how much light that object is getting and make it important or not so important.
Here's an example. Here's a good example. There's a setup right there.
So which is why I like C-stands, by the way.
I see that you guys use California Sunbounce, which is like my favorite reflector ever.
Yeah, they're great, aren't they? Aren't they great?
Yeah, they're amazing. So how many days does it take to do one centerfold?
Oh, well, this is an interesting question. With 8x10, it took 5 days. People go, are you crazy? 5 days? But remember, the depth of field on 8x10, I would have a hard time keeping both eyes in focus.
Right.
And if the girl has large breasts, I had a hard time keeping the breasts.
There's quite a bit of mileage to cover between the front and the back.
Well, you know what the word Schimpflug means? It's a German expression for the swings and tilts on an 8x10 camera.
Yeah.
There's change of focus points.
Right.
I used to have those cameras twisted. I mean, every which way possible, keep everything sharp.
Because
the feet would go one direction, the body would go another way, the eyes would go another way. That gave you such an incredible depth.
People who do tilt shift understand that because you're doing the same kind of thing, right, with the bellows.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing. You have two elements to deal with.
Right.
So because of that, and because my editor was incredibly critical, I mean unbelievably critical, everything had to be just so. Everything.
Wait, who's more critical, editor or Hef?
Well, this is interesting. I think Hef was, which made the editor critical. Because
right.
He didn't want to show Hef until it was absolutely done.
Right.
Hef does not like seeing something unless it's finished. You can't go to him and say, I'm going to fix this later, like Photoshop example. He wants to see it now, the correct way. It would take sometimes five. But remember, we had an unlimited budget.
Right.
You would shoot one day and go, I don't like the wallpaper, change it.
Right.
I don't like that shaving, that brush in the background, change the shaving brush. It's not the right period piece. Change a lamp, change a foot, change a hot. So the girl would have up to 10, 15 lights on her alone. We used bi-tubes, with double power packs. We were shooting F-22 on 8x10.
F-22.
And F-22 on 8x10.
Everything.
Wow. And then you add your bellow extensions onto that.
Because you want ultimate Christmas.
The whole wall shook.
Yeah.
The building literally, the wiring shook.
And with a view camera, I mean, you're manually changing, aren't you, each frame?
Every film holder.
So you put a holder in, you take the shot. Did you do Polaroid tests?
Yes, we had 8x10 Polaroids, hundreds of 8x10 Polaroids.
Wow. And then when you got just so, you put the frame, the holder in, and you get that shot.
My famous words, don't move at all.
We have lit you perfectly.
I mean,
do not move.
Look relaxed and sexy.
Yeah. Look, think Mercedes, but actually, don't move.
I have a quick question going off of that. Look relaxed and be sexy. I find that the body position, because a lot of times with female form, the more kind of contorted it is, the more angles, the
They're
more
difficult.
Flattering it looks.
Yeah.
How do you get them in these crazy positions but keep them looking natural?
I try to tell them that you need to understand one thing, is what we do today is not going to feel natural. It's going to feel contorted, uncomfortable, and you're going to be sore in the morning. But the human body does not look that great just standing there.
Right.
It looks
look at me.
Pretty straight.
Right.
So you need to twist, turn, and really arch and stretch it out to make it look its best. And they'll be in a pose, and they'll go, oh, stuff feel right. And I'll do a picture, and go, look at a monitor. And they go, wow. That looks natural.
Right. So. I tell people that in TV, you know, often you have to stand closer than you feel comfortable or seems natural. But you say it's not going to look that way on camera. Was it a big shift to go from film to digital for you? Did that change how you worked and everything?
Yeah, but the good thing is, because I was trained in film, I understand all the ratios, which apply directly across to digital. So I never am burning out errors and never blocking up shadows because I know the ratios are within my realm. What I see a lot of times is people, you know, they don't own a light mirror anymore. They just kind of wing it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's burned out and there's no detail anywhere to be found, and that you can't fix in Photoshop. You know, it's gone. So I'm trying to tell people, you know, buy a light meter, use it, meter it, you know, don't put it on P, which does not stand for professional, by the way. It's the program, you know, and learn to use your equipment.
And he has actually a really great resource. He has a posing guide. Because I think that would be one of the hardest things for me is going in and not knowing, okay, so you say lots of angles and it feels contorted, but what looks good? And your posing guide, by the way, is a great resource for that.
Oh, thank you. I'm shooting two girls today, and I said to one girl, do you want to just kind of move around on your own? She goes, no, you tell me what to do. No, just tell me what to do. I said, okay, you know. So I have my posing guide, and I know from experience what works, you know.
Do you ever have the girls actually look at the posing guide photos?
Yeah, sometimes. If they're not getting it, I'll say, see, here, try this. See how you move? And what I'll do is I'll find a pose that works, and then I'll just work to death. I'll just constantly turn her and turn her and turn until you get five or six poses out of one setup. Because once your light set is perfect, work to death. You know,
right.
Try different poses within that. If you're doing full length, for instance, try front, back, and side. Don't do just front shot and walk away and do something else. You invested too much time in your lighting, so make it work while you're there.
This is on shootthecenterfold.com. You also have workshops.
Yeah, he has a great workshop. Tell us about the workshop you have coming up.
We have one coming up in a couple weeks, September 16th through 18th, at the brand new Tropicana Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. They spent $108 million renovating it, so really, really spectacular. And there's a Club Nikki Beach there, which is a great nightclub we're tied into. We're having a three-day seminar. We're teaching lighting, posing. The first day is DSLR video, posing guides, and I'm doing a basic one-on-one lighting so people understand clearly one-on-one what we're doing the next 2 days. And my set designer is going to be there talking about how to build sets, how to design your sets. And Saturday is Gary Cole and Jeff Cohn, who are two editors of Playboy Magazine, will be there doing slideshows and demos. And we're each doing a lecture and demo about how we shoot. And then on Sunday, all of our clients get to shoot one of our playmates. We have three playmates there with our one-on-one personal supervision. So I'll be standing right next to the client, helping find a pose. And then Gary Cole and Jeff Cohn will be critiquing portfolios. Now, that's the thing that's really great about the seminar. You cannot get Gary Cole to look at your portfolio. He's not available.
Right.
He only looks at top-notch guys. So he's going to be able to sit there and look at your work while you're there and critique it. That's worth his weight in gold.
Do you only get pros at this? I mean, do you get some amateurs?
No. We get everybody.
Interesting.
We have beginners, intermediate, and advanced. We have everybody. Complete mix across the board. Absolute beginners and top-notch pros. And a couple of guys had actually gotten jobs at Playboy Stores.
Wow.
You know, Gary Cole liked his work and got up to jobs at .com. So,
wow.
It's a great career move. Yeah, it's really exciting.
I would guess that the advent of Playboy.com and the web in general has really meant that there's a lot more work for people to do this.
There is. There's a lot more content needed every single day.
Yeah.
You know?
All right, we got tips.
I mean, I'm finding myself not having just a magazine job to do now. We used to spend 5 days on a centerfold. Now we do 1 day.
Right.
I never answered that question. We're down to 1 day.
Right.
And
how long is that day?
Camera, it's not that long. It's like, you know, 10 hours, maybe 8, okay. 10 hours. And then the rest of the layout is done in 5 to 6 days, which used to take 3 weeks.
Wow.
So we're much more efficient. Digital is much, much faster. I figured out over the years of my career that every single year I waited exactly 2 weeks for Polaroid. Because each Polaroid took 2 minutes, and I multiplied by the hundreds that I shot every single day.
And by the way, this doesn't help, does it? An 8x10 Polaroid,
doesn't
speed it up. Okay,
no, that's right. No, it doesn't help.
We'll try.
So we spent 2 weeks of my life. I could have been in Hawaii those 2 weeks. Right?
Hey, but thank
digital is so much faster.
Thank goodness for Polaroids. In the day before digital, that was how you would figure out if you've got the setup right. Yeah. Now you just chimp. You just look at the back of the camera and you know what you got, right?
Yeah. I don't do that.
You don't?
You don't chimp?
Yeah. No. I don't know anybody, and I'm not trying to offend anybody. I don't know anybody can judge an image that's going to go 8x10 or bigger.
It's too small.
By a little tiny square on the back of the camera.
So you never,
I can't do it.
You never show a model anything on the back.
I shoot tethered.
So, you have it on a computer on a big screen.
Behind me a 30-inch monitor?
Yeah.
That's what I shoot.
And do you use what software are you using to show those?
We use Capture One and Lightroom both, depending on which camera I'm using.
Okay. Yeah, I think.
But the thing is, you need to see what you're getting in a large format, because when you blow it up later, you're going to miss a lot of detail. You go, oh, I didn't see that. Oh, I didn't see your finger not being right, or hand wasn't right, or foot wasn't right. You're going to see that on a monitor. So if you have your laptop, just tether it, or shoot it to a card. And, stop halfway through, load it up, and take a look at it.
Las Vegas or bust, baby. This is a great image for people going to your event.
People definitely check out the trailer on a site.
There's an easier way to get there.
She's hitchhiking to Arnie's workshop. All right, we got three tips from the great Arnie Freitag, starting with communication. I guess this makes sense. It's about communication, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So communicate with your models. Can you elaborate, Arnie?
It's not just communicating with your model. It's communicating with everybody. It's your communicating with your editors, communicating with your staff, your makeup people, your assistants, everybody, your set designers, your set builders. And if you don't have all those things, if you're just intermediate photographer and don't have access to all that stuff, you got to talk to your model. You've got to talk to her. I see so many people go up to a model and shoot a picture and not say a word. Or worse yet, shoot a picture and turn around, turn it back to the model, and look at the camera.
That's terrible.
I said, you just turned it back on a woman who is exposing herself to you. I mean, she's a fashion model. It doesn't matter. She's putting herself out there for you, and you turn it back on her. You can't do that. You need to look at it and go, oh, you look fabulous. Let me show you how you look, and, let me show you what I'm working on, or give me a minute to work on my light, or let's try this and that. Work the team together. So communicate. Very, very, very important.
So tip number two, have a plan.
Yeah, this is something I say all the time. I hear people say, oh, the magic in the studio happens. No, it doesn't. It happens, but it doesn't happen by itself.
Right.
It only happens when you set it up. There's nothing better when you look at your camera, you all know this, and you push a button and it starts happening. And you see it happening, and it's like, oh, that's a feeling I love, But you have to set it up for that moment. It's not going to happen by itself. You're not going to stumble across it every once in a while, sure. Blind squirrel finds a nut too, but that's rare.
So what about people?
You got to set it up.
What about people that don't have, say they're an enthusiast and they don't have access to a whole studio and all of these? What would your tip be for those guys or girls?
Again, communicate to your model. If it's just you and her, right, or you're your assistant, or you're your friend that's helping out, you need to tell them what you want to do. If you want the model to stand there and smile, you have to tell her, I need you to smile, but I want like a big smile. I mean, how big a smile do you want? A small smile? A really happy smile? I mean, there's different smiles. Don't just say smile. Say, I want kind of a grin, but not a really, I want to see a lot of teeth, just like a little grin. Or I want a really happy, you got the Mercedes smile, So communicate what you want. You have to be like a film director. You need to direct your models, both in posing and expression, to what you want. What mood you want to create. And that's what I mean, have a plan. You need to plan ahead of time what you're trying to say. Is it a daytime shot? Is it a nighttime shot? Are you in the girl's bedroom at nighttime? Or are you waking up next to the daytime? You need to set the mood with a plan and then light and work your set design around your mood that you planned ahead of time. And that's what I mean by having a plan. And the worst thing to do is go into a photo shoot and look like you're stumbling around for an idea. you lose the model. You lose her.
You got to inspire her, yeah. her confidence.
Yeah. You have to look like you're in control.
Yeah.
If they find you stumbling around, they know, they'll sense it. You lose it.
They sense fear. How do you keep from falling in love? How do you keep from falling in love with it with the your mom?
I fall in love all the time.
I would. I mean, like these beautiful women, you have this great kind of, you got this great relationship going. Man, it must break your heart every day at the end of the day.
He married a bunny.
No, in answer to that, how do you must break your heart every day? No, because there's another girl the next day.
So. He's got the ultimate.
That's the thing.
Ultimate.
Well, I actually have a very serious question. How do you control, if you're a male, how do you control...
Oh, come on.
No, I'm serious.
Because
it's pretty simple.
What's that?
What's more important to you?
Your job?
Your job?
Or that bunny?
Or that moment? Or, let's be honest, that moment.
That moment, because it's,
right?
You know, it's 10 seconds at best.
That moment will pass.
I would bet. I would postulate, Arnie, you tell me if this is true or not, that after a while, it's not a big deal anymore. You've seen them all.
Well, yeah, of course. But I'm just thinking for the new people, if you're nervous about that.
Right.
I would imagine some people are nervous about it. Maybe
not. Sure. Nervous or excited, there's a fine line there. But you have to remember, not that kind of excited, but the other kind.
Your reputation is everything if you're going to get models to work with you. You can't be a lech, right?
You cannot be. But you have to decide early on, is your career important to you? Do you want to go somewhere with this? Because if you start doing it the other way, word gets around really fast and nobody will work with you.
Of course. Nobody will work with you. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So keep them separate. Your personal life, your professional life are very,
and
very
I'm sure it's like a doctor. After a while, I mean, this is your business. It's just, you're not going to.
It's not a big deal.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So his third tip is do not get caught up in the equipment craze.
Right. So
that Leica S3, I shouldn't run out and buy one today?
If you can afford it, go ahead.
I bought this X100 because of Zach. I hear these photographers talk about their gear. I get caught up in this because, you know, I love gear. I'm not a very good photographer, but I love the gear.
All right, let me give you an example. I was playing golf with a buddy of mine, and we're both mediocre golfers at best. And we're in a golf shop, and he pulls out a new Nike driver, and he says to the guy, hey, let's change my game, make it better. And the guy looks at him kind of disgusted, and he goes, sir, it's not the arrows, it's the Indian.
Good line.
That's a great line. It's how you use it, not what you use.
Right.
And then I remember there was some tennis pro, it might have been Federer, one of those really great tennis players, played a charity match using a frying pan and beat the opponent. So it's not the equipment.
It isn't. Right?
I'm all for, you know, having good, solid equipment that works really well. That's important. But you can shoot a great picture with a 300-millimeter lens or a great picture with a 50-millimeter lens. It doesn't matter. It's how you see, not what you see with.
But it's also technique. I mean, you obviously have a huge amount of technique in what you're doing.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite?
But that's not equipment. That's knowledge.
That's learning. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite millimeter setting for your lens where you like to sit at?
I really don't. Depends on the lens. My average shoot is probably 5, 6, or 8. But if I'm shooting a 300-millimeter, f/2.8 is for sure my favorite setting.
What about
the more wide open, the better?
Are you shooting at 85, 100? Like, what range do you usually sit at?
100 ISO.
No, I mean, I'm sorry, zooming in your millimeter. So, like, are you sitting at 85 millimeter, 100 millimeter?
Usually around 85. Usually.
So, you find that for beauty, 85 is kind of the sweet spot?
Yeah, it's kind of a sweet spot. I guess in the old days, they had a Nikon 85 millimeter lens. It was my favorite lens ever. So, maybe I'm stuck at that focal length. I don't know. But I absolutely love my 300-millimeter. That is my favorite lens.
And f/22. I'm going to remember that, too.
On an 8x10, yeah.
You want that crisp, beautiful, everything.
You want it crisp for like a quarter of an inch is what it is.
Right.
That's your depth of field.
Right.
But remember, you know, on 8x10, you used to have a dark cloth whenever you had. Remember that?
That's right.
The image was upside down and backwards.
Right. So you have the cloth over your head. You're looking at this. You don't hold the thing and say, smile at the birdie, do you?
Pretty close. really close.
All right, Arnie has picked two of his favorite images. We're gonna, they may surprise you. We're gonna show you and talk about two of Arnie's favorite photos in just a little bit and why they are his favorite photos. But very quickly, I want to thank our friends at Netflix, because I'll tell you what, Netflix is a great place to watch movies. And this Netflix streaming on your computer, on your iPad, your iPhone, Android phone, your Xbox 360, your PlayStation 3. I mean, anywhere you go, you can watch great movies. I never run out of entertainment. Every night I'm home and I'm watching Netflix. I started Mad Men again because I want to, you know, October, the new Mad Men is coming, or maybe it's next summer, and I want to be ready. So I'm going back through all the four seasons of Mad Men. There's a show that's just, it's all about the art direction. And so it's just a beautiful, beautiful show. If you haven't seen Mad Men, please. I mean, this is just, you're going to love this. Set in the city, New York City in 1960s. It's the ad agencies. They're smoking. They're drinking. They're living hard. You know, this is the peak. This is, oh, I just love it. Just love it. Mad Max. There's a fun one. Buckaroo Banzai. Oh, I'm so happy. I got to watch that tonight. Look, $7.99 a month. This is the best deal. I'm $7.99 a month. The best deal in entertainment. Go to Netflix.com/twit, and you can have it free for the next 30 days. And, folks, I know almost all of you are Netflix members, so Double Indemnity. Classic Fred McMurray, Barbara Stanwyck, directed by Billy Wilder. There's another one I got to watch tonight.
If you type in Playboy, there's a bunch of, like, documentaries and other things going on.
All right. Yep, because there's video, too. A lot of video. You know, I actually watched a great, and this is on streaming, I watched this documentary about Hugh Hefner, and I'm sure Arnie is in here. This was a great movie. I really enjoyed this. Adults only. It's rated R. Look, you're going to love it. I know you're a member. Tell your friends. Go down the street and just say Netflix.com/twit. Print up stickers. Put them on the subway. I don't care what you do. Just get your friends, your family, strangers to subscribe, Netflix.com/twit. Yeah, I watched this a little while ago, and I just found it fascinating. Very interesting story. You still stay in touch with Hef? You still friends? You go to the mansion, I guess, yeah?
Yeah, I go to mansion most Sunday nights for movies, yeah.
Movie night. That must be fun.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's great. Are you kidding? First run movies? His living room? Yeah, it's really fun.
There's a guy that they coined the phrase living the dream for Hugh Hefner. That's all I'm going to say. Living the dream. All right, we got two of Arnie's favorite pictures. And, you know, given all of the centerfolds you've shot and all of that, I was very intrigued to see what your two favorite photos were. Let's start with this one. And tell us a little bit about this picture.
That's Sarah Underwood, our Playmate of the Year. And she's from a small town outside of Eugene, Oregon, and raised on kind of a little farm, you know, not very big. But what I love so much about it is it typifies the girl next door.
Mm-hmm.
This is the look on her face. And when I told her what I wanted, I said, I want you to look as innocent yet sexy as possible. Look sweet as you can, but give me something in your eyes that tells me that you're still a sexual person. And there's no nudity. You don't see your body at all. It's all about the face. And when you asked me earlier about faces and bodies and, you know, the bar thing we talked about, I said, I always look at the face first. The face is the most important to me. And if you've ever had a woman look at you like that, it just makes your heart melt.
Yeah,
you know that. I mean, it's just,
that's what I mean by falling in love. You look at that and you go, okay, I'm yours.
I love that picture.
You win.
Yeah.
Just adorable.
Here's a Mercedes. Here's the house. Here's the farm.
Whatever you want. She actually now works on G4 TV. She's a show host.
Yes, she does.
Yeah, on the feed.
And she's a great girl. She's really sweet. And she lives up to the girl next door image very, very well.
We got the chat room says the girl next door ... nice neighborhood.
Yeah, I wish it was my neighborhood.
Now you also did a great portfolio. We showed a few images of the Olympians.
Yeah,
which
the
I just
Olympian
love.
Shots are. Can you tell me about how this assignment came into being and how was it? Were they all for it? Were they excited? The models and all of it.
It's a great story because to me, this is my dream assignment. I mean, anybody that's out there who's worked for art directors knows that it can be very restrictive at times, and everybody has their own ideas. And a lot of times you sacrifice your creativity for someone else's. This assignment was given to me by an editor that said to me, we have 8 or 9 Olympian athletes that are currently in the upcoming Olympics, and they're willing to do news, and I want you to go shoot a book that people would put on a coffee table. And that's the only direction to give you. Do what you want. I said, are you kidding me? Here's a bunch of money and a crew and some girls. I'm just going to do what I want to do. Thank you. So I took my clothing stylist, who is a great stylist, my truck and my crew, and we drove out to the desert. And I wanted to shoot in some kind of natural environment because I just thought nature is so powerful and these people are so powerful, very strong. And I found some dry lakes and I found some salt flats and some mountains and I started trying wardrobe on them. I go, what am I doing? They should have nothing on. I mean, how am I going to show their great, strong, athletic bodies with clothes on? So none of them had clothes on, and except for some of the opening shots where we couldn't have nudes. And I just shot them in positions where I try to show their strength and power. There were some things which you don't, is not on the website, of them running, where they're going so fast that our truck couldn't keep up with them. So I was laying in the back of the truck trying to follow them, and they were faster than my truck was. So it was truly a dream assignment.
They're athletes. They're great athletes.
Yeah.
I went to Chicago and did a really great layout, and unfortunately they, of course, changed the layout, which happens all the time, but they own the pictures, so they can do what they want.
Right.
But Christy Hefner actually sent me a private letter saying, thank you for taking Playboy to an entirely different level with this Victoria.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, and I know the New York Times sports editor wrote an article and he said, oh my God, Playboy shooting Olympians. I can just imagine what it's going to look like. However, after seeing Freitag's images, these are stunning. This is not the Playboy we thought it was going to be.
Well, I think the choice of black and white, for instance, is telling.
Some of them, yeah.
I mean, it really focuses on physique, form. It's in, you know, the original Olympics were nude.
That's exactly right.
Is that true?
I didn't know that.
Well, I mean, in the Greek era.
For me.
Yeah.
Well, the original ones, but also there's a film done by Leah, a German woman, just before the
1940s. Lily Reichenstahl, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And her images were so powerful. Mm-hmm. It's a great film. We had a chance to see it.
Yeah.
I think it's called Olympians. I'm not sure. But her images were so dramatic and powerful. It was a real inspiration for me.
Did you find were they at all reluctant to do the shoot?
Not a bit. These women have so much confidence. And I got to tell you, I respect these people way more than I thought I was going to. The discipline, they train around 340 days a year.
Wow.
Every single day. And the woman you just saw on the dry lake, she ate like 10,000 calories a day. It just burned her off. It just burned her right off.
It's inspiring, actually.
It's such a discipline. And when I shot the high jumpers, the triple jumpers, you know, going over on a pole vault, they hit the same mark over and over exactly. And they're so disciplined. The athlete something can do exactly what you asked for. It's amazing. It's a real treat.
Can you tell us the technical part of the shot that we were just looking at, the black and white? What lighting were you using? What camera did you have out there in the desert?
Yeah. The first color shot of Sarah, which was the girl next door look, was 300mm f2.8. And it was just like 3 white reflectors, one on each side of the camera, actually just very close to her, very tight in, and one underneath, and that was it. Just a lot of white reflectors bouncing light everywhere. And the Olympia was shot on a Hasselblad from overhead with scaffolding. I was shooting straight down at her. And it was nothing more than a slight flash film. That was it. It was simple. I think the lens might have been a 125 or so.
Well, you're an inspiration. I want to encourage everybody who's interested to Go to shootthecenterfold.com and find out about Arnie's workshop. It's coming up 9 days, 18 hours, 23 minutes, and 24 seconds from right now. And you can find out more about it on the website, shootthecenterfold.com. What a great opportunity to learn from the master.
And if you're on the fence, then just watch the trailer, and, you know, mind will be made up.
It's pretty exciting.
So, can we open up with a couple? Do you have time for?
We got to run.
Oh, we got to run.
I hate to do it. We have questions for you.
But...
Maybe we could just get Arnie to come back, and then we could do that next time.
Sure, I'll come back.
Arnie, you're the best.
Love you guys.
Lots of questions for you. We'll book you again because you're just the greatest. You're an inspiration, and it's just really after many years of enjoying your work. And I mean enjoying your work. It's been great to finally meet Arnie Freitag. Thank you, Arnie.
Thanks, Arnie.
Well, my pleasure, guys. Okay, take care.
ArnieFreitagStudios.com and ShootTheCenterfold.com for more on the workshop. And thank you once again for bringing in the best darn photographers in the world.
Thanks,
it's
Leo.
Really inspiring. It makes you want to go out and take pictures. Next week, Alex Koloskov.
Yeah.
Tell us about Alex.
Well, he is actually a little bit out of my field in regards to his work, and that's one of the reasons why to bring him in.
We want to stretch. He's a technical photographer.
He's totally technical, and
amazing
his
stuff.
Brilliant, and I have no idea how he does it. So I think it will be interesting. It'll be more of a technical show, and I'm very excited to learn from him. So
Technical Secrets of Studio Photography, alexkoloskov.com. Thank you, Arnie, and thank you all for being here, and we will see you next week. Isn't this fun? On Twit Photo.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Leo. Next week.